This is a Ben Fred Friday presented by STLCriminalDefense.com. STLCriminalDefense.com. Henderson and Watercutty, they're available for you even during this crisis 24/7, 7 days a week. And that's STLCriminalDefense.com. Please support our sponsors. Ben, another Friday, no sports, but still plenty of sports to talk about. And good morning to you.
Good morning, Dan. Yeah, we're not quite to the point of having to talk about, replays of dog races and guys racing marbles on
the
internet yet. But by next week, we might be there.
We did have some baseball talk, though, yesterday as John Mozeliak met with the media via Zoom. What did you take away from that conversation with the media?
Well, I don't want to be a negative Nancy here, but for me, listening to Mo talk, and it was very clear that he was trying to be upbeat, trying to be positive, trying to be optimistic. I think, he's candid about that. He's saying, look, I'm going to try to lead, in the positive direction, and I'm going to hope that we're back soon. And I'm going to hope everything, everything moves as quick as possible. But just, him also being a realist and answering questions honestly for 45 minutes, to me, it was almost a series of reminders of how anyone who's thinking this is, they've got this figured out, or anyone who's thinking there are concrete answers available right now is fooling themselves. I mean, we went through a series of topics, that showed why this is such a difficult thing to navigate for baseball. Most important being that it will not be baseball that decides when it's safe and possible to start to build toward its return. I mean, this is for, you got to think, whether it's baseball or college football or whatever, the NBA, NHL, it is operated by individuals who are, always in control. They are meticulous in their planning, and they know which strings to pull, and they know the calendar backwards and forwards. And if they do this day, then it affects this 6 months from now. That's why these guys are all in these positions. And you and I both know how detail-oriented John Mozeliak is. But for him not to be able to have a clear calendar, I think in some ways you just kind of throw up your hands. And it won't be him who's deciding these things. So whether it was talking about just the human side of it, which we, I think, oftentimes probably too often overlook, like a guy like Kim, who would like to go back to South Korea to see his wife and his two children, and is it worth the risk of him potentially having travel issues or not being able to get back if that changes, all the way down to, pitchers and how they're supposed to handle this period of time where no one really knows what's next and what should and should not they be doing. It's just so much unknown that it's really difficult to navigate. I wrote this and I didn't want to sound like the sad trombone the day after what should have been the home opener, but the more I think about what this could look like, the more I read up on coronavirus, which I'm not pretending at all to be an expert in, but the things that you know about it are that it's continuing to spread. You can be contagious before you show signs of symptoms, and right now there's no known cure for it. I don't know, knowing those things, how baseball can say, hey, here's our planned start date and here's what it will look like, whether there are fans or no fans, because I don't think anything can say that. So sports are in the same boat, and it's just such a rare time where they don't have the answers. And these are guys, men and women, who are in the positions they're in because they almost always have the answers, or at least something pretty close to it.
No drop dead date for a season to be played. And that means that guys have to prepare differently. And I think everybody's in agreement. I've been reading comments from position players, and they say, I need like 15 to 20 live at bats, like spring training at bats, not being in a cage, but at bats. And then I'm fine. I'm ready to go. But that's not the same for pitchers. So it'll be interesting how the organization is trying to keep the pitchers somewhat sharp to be ready to go at any moment's notice if that phone call comes and says, let's go, we've got baseball.
Well, the way you do it, and I think this is something that I think everybody should be on board with, is you expand the rosters as needed and you carry a ton of pitchers. And that's what we've talked about. That could benefit the Cardinals because they've got so much major league caliber depth there that I think that would that would benefit them. What Mo said is he's kind of got, they really told guys to like basically mimic January and kind of hang out in that January zone until they get a better look at what this could look like. How long can they stay there? I mean, at what point do guys, you know, we haven't seen this yet, but it's probably just a matter of time until we see a guy get hurt during this kind of nebulous time. And I think we'll see a lot of pitching injuries when we come back for this kind of whatever this second spring, you know, summer training is what Luke Voigt called it when I talked to him the other day. He's back in St. Louis kind of trying to figure this out. But you're right. He's like, I can basically roll out of bed, go and be ready to play, you know, because I just need a couple cuts and I'll be good to go. Pitchers, obviously much different animals in terms of how much preparation and they need to stretch back out and things of that nature. So it's going to be about the pitchers. And I think we're going to see, unfortunately, some hiccups. They're such creatures of habit that anytime you throw a wrench in that machine, it's going to probably show some sparks at some point.
Mo did address the idea of playing games without fans, didn't he?
He did. And, you know, I just asked him, we asked him, said, you know, it was kind of a tag team question in some ways with Mark Saxon of The Athletic, who asked, you know, hey, is this something you guys are talking about? And Mo said, yeah, I mean, you're talking about everything. But, you know, he was very hesitant to give much certainty to anything because I don't think he thinks that really helps. And I see what he's saying there is like, what's the point of us talking through these with in the public realm like we are when we're on these conference calls? Because ultimately, I think what you will see if that happens is similar to kind of what's happening on the news side, where, yes, hospitals are having meetings daily about, hey, we don't have supplies for X and we're in trouble if we get to this point. And they have to know that information. And I'm not one to argue that the public doesn't deserve certain information, but I also, at that level, I don't know what good it does for people to know that where hospitals are going to panic. I mean, I don't know that that helps any of the public good. So I think baseball is trying to say, look, you know, we're going to leave some of the sausage making, try to leave it behind closed doors as much as possible. We'll see what gets out. But of course, they're talking about all scenarios. They're talking about what if we get the green light to play without fans? They're also talking about what if this 2020 season is canceled altogether. My question to Mo, kind of jumping off of Mark's question, was, what's your opinion on should baseball be played without fans? You know, because some will argue, and I think you can make a case that baseball isn't really baseball if there's not people to watch it and there's not that stadium vibe. Now, I've joked that, you know, the Marlins fans would disagree, the Marlins would disagree, but in all seriousness, that's part of the experience. And would it mean more if baseball waited until it could have that full house? My opinion, I think if you took a poll of fans and said you can watch a game on TV right now, and there won't be anybody in stands and it will be a little eerie, or maybe let the players pick soundtracks by inning. I mean, do something fun with it, but there's not going to be stands. I think 90 to 95% of fans would say, yes, I would like to watch that game on TV.
99% would
no
say
baseball.
Yes. 99%.
I do agree. I think ultimately, yeah, everybody wants to be able to be there, but based off of the alternative being nothing, then I think, yeah, people would want to watch. And that's what Mo said. He said, you know, he's out doing his walks like we all are, and people from 6 feet away are telling him, hey, you know, play as soon as you can, no matter what. And I think he's hearing that. You know, the other thing that he's pointing out, and the other thing I talked to him that I asked about is like, okay, say you get that green light, which to me is unrealistic because while, yes, it's certainly a smaller group if you don't have people in the stands, you know, tens of thousands of people. But I think we underestimate at times the amount of people it takes to have a baseball season work, even without fans. You've got to have the players. You've got to have the reserves. You've got to have the managers, the umpires, the team chef, the plane, you know, the pilot. And we're talking skeleton crew still. And it's a lot of people. And those people all have families, you know, so are they not going to be allowed to interact with their families who could get them potentially infected? I'm talking if we don't have, you know, a vaccination or an answer yet. And then, you know, are the families, you know, not supposed to go out into the real world and interact with people? And so ultimately, you know, what will happen when a player tests positive if baseball does kind of rush back? And that's what, you know, what Mo in his words said would be a disaster. And it's what we saw in the NBA. And at that point, what do you do? Because everybody that player has come in contact with is supposed to, at this time, if we're playing it out with the information we have right now, would be supposed to quarantine for 14 days, which there's your team, you know, so you're just going to take a whole team out of the mix if the season's going on. You know, I mean, there's a lot of, the more you think about it, again, the harder it kind of gets to figure that out. So no fans in the stands, but what about players and, you know, and just simple interactions with other teams, a hard contact play at second base, a guy spitting sunflower seeds, is that going to stop? I mean, you can have these kind of thought experiments over and over again. But unless you're going to put these players in a vacuum sealed clubhouse and have them sleep there, then it's probably irresponsible to think that they're not going to have just as much risk of a normal person as contacting or contracting, you know, this disease from the virus from someone who has more, you know, exposure to the outside world. So I think it's great in theory, but the more you play it out, the harder and harder it gets.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.
The Cardinals, if they do come back, at least they're getting healthier with Michaelis and Miller. And Mo did update the media on those two. And then Brett Cecil as well. There's some news with him.
Yes, it sounds like good news on both Michaelis and Andrew Miller. Andrew Miller left camp in a pretty good place compared to where he was. Michaelis continues to take advantage of, really, for him, I wouldn't say a get out of jail free card, but he's going to be, when baseball does return, whatever it looks like, he will be, you know, significantly back from this forearm issue that he had. So I'm curious what this rotation could look like with that news. If he progresses as he hopes, I've seen a lot of stories about teams potentially employing, you know, six man rotations. We have talked a lot in recent years about the Cardinals having enough to do a six-man rotation. Could this finally be the thing that pushes them in that direction? You know, that would be interesting. Not a lot of details right now on Brett Cecil, other than Mo said he had some sort of a personal issue going on where he's kind of hit a pause point in his recovery. So I'm not sure what that means. There was a lot to talk to him about, so that didn't get drilled down on as much as it normally would have in a series of questions, sounds like something is kind of at least putting him on the shelf for the time being.
Let's talk a little hockey, and a guy that knows a thing or two about work stoppages is number 16, Brett Hull, and he was involved with three of those. You recently had the chance to catch up with Brett, who's never shy to talk. So what did Brett have to say to you?
Well, I'm trying to kind of track down some different Blues players formerly who had, you know, who can speak to kind of what it means to play part of a season or to have a stoppage. And Brett is a great person. I'll say a great person to talk to you about going through it. I'm not sure that Brett has the most sound advice, not because he doesn't know his hockey. That's not at all what I mean in terms of the current player, because Brett's advice is more or less suck it up and go play. Which he played in a different era, and God love him for it. You know, I mean, he said that when the game stopped for him, they pretty much got after it, and he wasn't talking about training. And then when the games came back, they went back to work. So a different era, right? And also he pointed out too, I mean, guys now, these professional athletes now, whether it's baseball or hockey, they're always in shape. You know, it's not like it used to be where a guy goes off and doesn't lift a weight for the off season and shows up out of shape. And the goal of camp is to get them back into shape. The goal of camp is to get them ready to play. I mean, they're in shape all the time. I mean, Brett mentioned a great point. They don't even do the conditioning tests like they used to, you know, back in his day, because there's no point. Guys are playing at such a high level now, and it's such a different game in terms of skill that the players, if they're not in shape when they show up, they're not going to be able to compete. And they've all learned that. So he doesn't think the quality of hockey will suffer if hockey does get to come back. Will it get to come back? You know, that's anybody's guess.
I think it's fascinating. And this is going to be a question at least surrounding Alex Pietrangelo, of a pending free agent potentially. But I think in the bigger picture of sports, if and when it comes back, with the lost revenue that teams are experiencing right now and the league-wide lost revenue, I don't know what that means to the landscape of paying players. And I just wonder out loud about that. I don't know where you're at with that, and as it pertains to Alex or any potential free agent, Mookie Betts, Trevor Bauer in baseball, whatever. But yeah, it's simple economics. If you don't have money coming in, you can't pay people the kind of money that maybe they were getting before, and that's maybe the price that somebody's going to have to pay as we go along.
I think we can have this conversation on a series of levels, and it's one that I think is being had, you know, more and more often as people sit around and think about sports and the role they play in our society right now. In terms of the NHL, you know, the salary cap, which almost always goes up as long as business is moving in the right direction, is determined directly off of the revenue the league makes. So the league will take a hit in revenue this season, no matter what it ends up being like compared to last season. And so much of their revenue, and it's pretty evenly split between owners and players, is dependent on the postseason. NHL playoffs make those guys a ton of money, so that's why they're going to really push to try to have some form of playoffs, and that's why they're going to be very willing to play so deep into the season if that allows them in order to play. It's they want to have a chance to win a championship, absolutely. They also want to get that money. But you're right, looking at that salary cap for the next round of free agency, there will be a lot of teams that will probably be, you know, handcuffed to some degree because of their ability to go spend. Now, you can argue it's an even playing field, and that's fair, but you wonder, you know, for Alex Pietrangelo, a guy who was in kind of his platform year and playing great hockey, a chance to go out and show everybody that he's worth that kind of money. All of a sudden now he's supposed to take some, you know, team friendly 1 year deal. I don't know if I'd want to do that if I were him. I also think that in some ways, you know, this might be a reminder to him of, hey, where do you really just want to be in terms of life? I mean, the guy's got three triplets, you know, he's got triplets, young triplets. He's got in-laws who live here. I think Alex Pietrangelo has a lot going on in terms of life that would be appealing for him to stay in St. Louis. If the Blues try to say, hey, we'll give you what if they gave him a competitive, you know, well-paid 1 year deal that got him to another shot at free agency when the money's right across the league, that might be appealing. Or what if they could give him some sort of an extension where he takes less in that year because it's so screwed up the first year and then it escalates after that. I mean, we're just spitting things out here, but personally, I've always thought that Pietrangelo will end up staying in St. Louis. I think this hiccup, this curveball, could help as much as it might hurt. And I think that for a few of those reasons I mentioned, I'll be surprised if the Blues let him get away. And I think the lure of him leaving, if it does come to that, will be based purely on a payday that is impossible in his eyes to turn down. Those paydays might not be available for many players because of the financial situation the league is going to be in after this.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of Scoops with DannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.
You've been busy. You had the chance to visit with Jim Stirk, at least part of a Zoom conversation, if you will, with members of the media. So the AD of Mizzou addressed some of the things in college sports. What did you take away with that?
Yeah, I'm the king of the Zoom now.
Well, you're not the only one.
Yeah, we're all Zooming. Yeah. How much money are those guys making? That's what I want to know.
Pretty good.
I haven't figured out how to give myself one of those fancy backgrounds yet, although it was the reason I shaved this week. So I am thankful to some degree that we're doing some sort of face-to-face communication, or else I might be in a desperate looking place. So listening to Stirk, you know, look, it's just clear comparing the conversations with Stirk and Mo, just how much unknown there is, but also how many decisions have to be made right now in this kind of nebulous time. I mean, Missouri is looking at its budget. It's looking at, you know, if all of these players that were just granted an extra year of eligibility come back, where's that scholarship money going to come from? What has to be adjusted accordingly? I asked Sterk if kind of the same similar question that was asked of Mo, is there a date on his calendar, on the, you know, NCAA calendar where they say, hey, if we're not playing college football by this date, then it's not worth trying to play it. And he didn't want to have that conversation because he thinks they could be back in play, you know, not in play, but getting prepared to play around June. Now, to me, that sounds optimistic. But again, no one knows, you know, who's to say that that's too optimistic. I mean, we don't know. And Sterk doesn't have any information that any of the rest of us, you know, have. I mean, we're all kind of trying to figure this out, and there will be people who are a lot more tuned into this than we are that make those calls. But if college football doesn't happen, then I think a lot of schools are going to be in trouble in terms of their finances. That's probably the understatement of the century. I mean, college football is the bread and butter for the NCAA, and that in college basketball, which has already taken a hit because of March Madness. I mean, we're looking at a fortune's worth of lost money if you can't have football stadiums filled with fans. And I don't know, you know, I guess they would consider if the only option was playing it without fans, but that would be a staggering, staggering defeat for the world of college football. What's fascinating to me is this debate now that's happening about the conversation. You know, Eli Drinkwitz at Mizzou is getting fired up because people are talking about this notion that there might not be college football this year, which, you know, Eli Drinkwitz knows how to run offense and he's entitled to his opinion. But if he's upset by the conversation that this is happening, then I don't know what to tell him, because this is a conversation that is happening. And we're having it about all these things. And it's not a shot at college football. It's wondering about the way they're going to mitigate the spread of this virus if they don't have a cure for it yet. And if they continue to not be able to tell that people are contagious for it before they show signs, and the crowds are the other big thing. And I mean, I don't know if they would look at maybe doing smaller crowds or no crowds. We're not there yet. But every sport that has a foreseeable start date is having these conversations. It doesn't do a lot of good to throw fear at it, but colleges especially are so dependent on, in their athletic departments, on college football, that you wonder what sports would get cut, what sports would lose funding if they're not able to pull off a college football season. That's a huge part of this conversation that I think we're just kind of starting to scratch the surface of.
I wonder if the money is so big that they just push it back. It's in the winter months. If let's just say, for argument's sake, you could start the season in November, would you do that? I wonder if that's on the table right now with college football.
Well, I think they would do anything possible within reason to try to have a season. And then, you know, beyond that, you wonder, and then I said earlier that we can have this conversation on a multitude of levels. One of the ones that I'm wondering about is, you know, when we come out of this, there's really only probably two ways it's going to go. One will be that we're so hungry for sports and it's going to, there'll be a boom, right? I think the other way is, especially at the college level, is it going to force a conversation about the way these college sports, you know, big time college sports operate? And I'm not talking specifically about Mizzou here. I'm talking about the NCAA's, you know, blue blood programs and all of their peers. I mean, when you think about how much money a college football season generates for a school, and then you think about the fact that, you know, these schools are now having to worry about their finances and worrying if they're going to be able to come up with their money because their expenses are so high. You don't have to get too far down that road to wonder, how are these schools, these athletic departments, not making more money? How are they not saving more money? How are they not in the position to turn around and say, hey, our state's struggling with this pandemic. Here's a loan from a state university, compared to, hey, you know, the UCF athletic director is trying to float the idea of some sort of potential federal buyout for college sports. what world does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I just wonder, you know, are we going to have a conversation here about the fact that if a March Madness tournament and one college football season were to be put on a shelf, and every single school that participates in those were all of a sudden to be without money, what does that tell us about the finances and the way that some of those departments, well, not all, some of them, all of them, are ran? I mean, these schools spend unnecessary money on everything. They build new campuses, new athletic departments, new facilities every couple of years. They pay a ton of money for needless search firms for coaching hires that they know they're going to make anyway. I mean, they spend money just to say they need money. And at some point, you know, if they encounter some significant turbulence, then people are probably at some point going to have to look up and say, hey, does this make sense?
Sure. I'm going to wrap it up with this. I know you had the chance to visit with the Illini's Brad Underwood, and he had a great year. I would love to have seen what the Fighting Illini could have done in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, didn't happen, but what was your conversation like with the head coach of the Fighting Illini?
Brad Underwood is, you know, I've been a fan of his for a long time. I mean, going back to when I covered Tennessee, and I would, you know, try to write as much as I could. I was a beat writer for the News Sentinel at the time, and every list I had, every time Tennessee had a coaching search, was like, they should really go hire Brad Underwood. And they never did. And it ended up being great for Illinois because they had the kind of season there that they hoped to have when they hired Brad. He is obviously frustrated by the way their season ended, not because he thinks it should not have, you know, he doesn't think they should have continued to play, obviously, but disappointed because they had such a great year going. They were back in the top 25. They were winning games down the stretch of their season. They had gotten that double bye in the Big Ten tournament. And then all of a sudden they're practicing for it, and they're told, hey, it's going from no fans to not happening. And there'll always be certainly a part of him that wonders what if. But I think that the silver lining is, like a lot of these coaches, whether it's, you know, Konzo Martin at Mizzou or even Eli Drinkwitz, who, you know, has been scrambling to try to get to the job that he got at Mizzou, they're having the chance to spend time with their family. And you can relate to this, Dan, and, you know, people might roll their eyes, but these guys, they just work all the time, and they're out recruiting, and they're at the offices late at night. It's not a healthy work lifestyle, but it's a grind. And it is something that they dedicate themselves to, their families understand, but, you know, for them to be able to have weeks at home where they're making dinner and grilling and hanging out with their kids, I mean, that's valued. They would rather be coaching, but, you know, they obviously wish that things would not have ended this way, but they are, I think, finding some silver linings and kind of a reset and a chance to be with their family. So I know that Brad is, you know, trying to find some good in that. Obviously wishes that he could have continued to coach his team. I think they would have been really dangerous in the NCAA tournament because of what they had. I mean, their defense was looking pretty good. Io DeSumo had kind of risen up as a game changer in crucial moments, which it seems like teams that have those kind of on-court killers do well in the tournament. And they could be really good next year, depending on what happens. Io DeSumo is going to have to decide if he wants to try to go. He's kind of in that weird range where he's like a mid-30s pick probably in the draft. The first round stops at 30. I've always thought that if a guy's a dead for sure first rounder, you go. And if you're not, you come back. If he were to come back for his junior season with the freshman class that Illinois has coming in, it'd be pretty dangerous. He's also got two transfers that are going to come off the bench this year who had to sit out last year. Some of those guys could be, you know, impacting the starter rotation. They could be a very dangerous team if they get DeSumo back. Should be good without him, but if Io's there, they're going to be pretty good again, which I think is some comfort. But for Illinois fans who are wondering what could have been, they got to know their head coach is thinking the same thing.
Always great to visit, Ben. Thank you, and we'll do it again next Friday.
Sounds good, man. I'll scout out some sports for us to watch. Maybe we can get some like virtual hangman or tic-tac-toe or something. You are you big in Connect Four? Maybe we could do a Zoom Connect Four game.
I'm big in, you know, well, just about anything at this point, Ben.
You've been doing speed walking.
I'm telling you, man, I've been on more walks than I've ever taken in my life. Ever.
So, all right. No, I'm curious though, because I mentioned those coaches, but you travel as much as anybody. And I know you love your kids and you're excited to be around them. What's the one thing you've been doing that you wouldn't normally get to do?
Having a family dinner.
Yeah.
Think about that. We actually sit down, all of us together, and have dinner. And I was saying to somebody the other day, I said, you know, you can count on that on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and that's about it. It's kind of hit and miss because, you know, my wife and I were actually talking about it. It's a, you know, you try to find the good in everything, right? You try to find the silver lining and hope, and it's been a blessing to be home with family. None of us are going to practices or games. I'm not calling games, so take the time at home and spend it with each other, and that part of it has been a lot of fun. I can tell you that for sure.
I dig it. Yeah, I've been cooking a little bit more, and it's.
Have you survived?
I'm not saying it's good, but it's hot, and my wife doesn't like cough it up in front of me. So she's a saint, but I mean, it's probably the most time either of us have spent consecutively at home, and I mean, forever.
Yeah,
I mean, since we've been working, I guess.
Right.
You know?
It's been good though. And that's the, you know, as I say for everybody, just got to have hope, got to have faith and try to stay positive as much as we can. And that's the way I approach it.
Yeah. I think it's a good outlook.
See you, buddy. We'll catch you up next Friday.
Talk soon.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of Scoops with DannyMac.com, a full service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois, state, federal, municipal courts. Think Henderson Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400, 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.